Good morning. It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. The signs are up. The mailers are out. The robocalls are made. It's clearly election season. And on Tuesday, Arizonans who haven't voted early will cast their ballots for several races, including governor, attorney general, and secretary of state. Joining me now to break down the races and some of the trends in them are Catherine Alonzo, founding partner of the campaign consulting firm Javelina, and Chip Scutari, co-founder of Scutari and Sislak Public Relations. Welcome to you both.
Thanks
for having us.
So, other than the governor's race and the ones in which you guys might be working on, which ones are you following just out of interest, do you think are particularly close or anything like that, Catherine?
I think there's a lot of really interesting contested races. The Secretary of State's race is really interesting, the Attorney General's, and a lot of nominees coming out of those primaries that are going to be really interesting to follow their path in the general election.
Chip?
Yeah, I agree. Secretary of State, I think the Congressional District 7 with Ruben Gallego and Mary Rose Wilcox. But I also think from the 30,000-foot level, I'm fascinated to watch to see if the independent vote actually matters. You know, we're seeing for the first time that independents are getting out there in bigger numbers, at least taking ballots. And some people estimate in the Republican primary that could be up to 15% of the vote, which could be a game-changer in several races.
Is it fair to say that some large percentage, 50% plus something, of folks who are independents in this primary will get Republican ballots? Is that too big of a stretch? Just because in a lot of places that's where the action is.
Yeah, I think a majority, I don't know the exact statistic, but a majority of people who are requesting independent ballots seem to be voting in the Republican primary for the governor, secretary of state race, and other races. So I heard an interesting stat just this morning that in 2012 in the primary, people who voted on election day and people who handed in their early ballots on election day, that constituted about 52% of the vote, which is fascinating to me as a political observer because, I mean, right now there's a lot of votes that still haven't been cast yet, and a lot will happen on election day. So this kind of theory that, oh, after a few weeks of early ballots, these races are over is just not true.
Yeah, Catherine, when you talk about sort of election month, which a lot of candidates and campaigns talk about from the time that early voting starts to the actual election day primary or general, do you get a sense of sort of what the breakdown is of when people decide to mail in their ballots? You know, and this year, are they doing it earlier, later, anything like that?
Usually you see a big peak of people at the beginning who return their ballot right away. They've had their minds made up. They're waiting for it to come in the mail. Then it usually sort of lows out a little bit, and then there's a big burst at the end. So far this year, turnout looks to be lower than it has been in previous primary years, and there are, you know, you could speculate there are two ways that'll play out. One would be that people are undecided and they're holding onto their ballots, and then we'll see that big burst at the end. And two could be that there's not a lot of enthusiasm for the primaries that are happening, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens with turnout over the next week.
What kind of role do you foresee independents playing this year?
It's going to be really interesting. In the general election, I think they're going to play a really big role. The independent registration is just trending up and up and up each year. So what's going to be interesting to see, though, is there a large number of independents who are already enthusiastic for a primary candidate, or are they undecided and, you know, on the table for everybody in the general? That's my sense, that I think that a lot of independents have just not made their mind up and are going to be paying attention over the next 8 weeks.
So in a situation like that, especially, you know, if an independent hasn't made up their mind, or if a voter hasn't made up their mind, some of the stuff that's going on now could still make a difference. All the commercials we're seeing, all the calls we're getting, all the emails we're getting, all the, you know, the polls, be they push polls or otherwise, that we're getting endorsements, things like that. So, Chip, kind of what you were saying before, that, you know, stuff going on between when folks get their ballots and election day, that stuff still matters.
Yeah, and if you know, we're all in the political bubble. We love it. We live it every day. But I have a lot of friends, relatives, who they're just learning about the candidates now. If they don't watch a lot of TV, they probably throw out their mail. So a lot of people are just studying what the candidates are all about. And that's why I think, you know, some people may not have turned in their ballots for that reason. Another reason may be, say, in the governor's race with, you know, Doug Ducey and his, you know, dark money people who are behind him, or Christine Jones, has been a lot of negative ads on the TV. And, you know, I don't know this time around if that will work or if that's making people a little hesitant about who they're going to vote for. So there's a lot of factors. I think there's a lot of unknowns in this election. So it'll be interesting to see how everything turns out on Tuesday.
Well, you bring up commercials, and I feel like I ask this every 2 years, but I feel compelled to ask again. Is this campaign season nastier than it has been in the past, or is this just sort of the way it is, and we try to put it out of our minds right after the election is over?
So, you know, what you've seen is this huge burst of dark money. And it's funny, if this election season had been a drinking game and you had to drink every time you heard the phrase
which some people,
dark
I'm sure,
money,
have made it one.
Yeah, we all would be in trouble. But, you know, it's true. So what dark money enables campaigns to do is go negative, that it's way easier to attack somebody if you don't have to put your name on it. So what you've seen is this burst of negativity. Voters will tell you that they don't respond very well to negative campaigns, and that when they see a negative campaign ad, they're less likely to vote for that person. And yet you often see the person who has the most spending against them with negative ads lose. So there's an inverse there with what people say they're affected by and what they're actually affected by.
And I think when you use the term dark money, there's differences to me between when you know a Phoenix chamber or an Arizona chamber are doing an independent expenditure, and they'll tell you, hey, we're endorsing candidate X, so you're probably going to see mailers for that person or against their opponent, compared to other groups who you have no idea where their funding's coming from. Is it in-state? Is it out-of-state? So I think there's a delineation between those kind of independent expenditures and truly dark money, where you have no idea who's funding it. Are they from here? Are they from out of state? And I think, you know, if you look at one example, Arizona Free Enterprise Club, they've done, it feels like, 12 mailers for Justin Pearson, the Secretary of State race. Some of these things are so laughable. They're talking about, you know, his NRA record, his pro-life record. And I'm just, you know, I turned to my wife and I said, are Arizona voters this gullible? Do they know that the Secretary of State has to do with election law and not about guns and, you know, whether you're pro-life or pro-choice? So we'll see how discerning Arizona voters are and how much that comes into play. But the one thing it's done, it's definitely polarizing politics, which is not a good thing.
It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody, joined by Chip Scutari and Catherine Alonzo. Chip, you had mentioned that if independents turn out in large number, it could be a significant deal in a lot of races. Which ones?
You know, I think, you know, when you look in the governor's race on the Republican side, I think if there is a, you know, sizable chunk of votes, I mean 15-16% of votes, that would bode well for former Mayor Scott Smith, former Mesa Mayor Scott Smith, who is more of a center-right candidate than, you know, a far-right candidate. And he appeals to a broader array of Republicans and independents, and I think that would help a candidate like Michelle Reagan in the Secretary of State's race. And there'll be other, you know, in other races where the independent vote will matter, but like Catherine said before, this trend is not going away. So a lot of, you know, far right and far left people won't like it, and they'll want to shut down the primaries, but I think this independent trend is here to stay, and I think this is the first election where people are somewhat paying attention, and they realize their vote can make a difference in these elections.
When we talk about independents, I think there's sort of a feeling that these are all sort of like moderate people, sort of center-left, center-right, sort of in the middle. But it seems to me that that's kind of a dangerous thought process, because there are a lot of people who are independents who are either maybe the Republican Party isn't right enough for them or the Democratic Party isn't left enough for them. It's not just this big, like, collaboration of moderates, is it?
Exactly. And people register for a particular party for all kinds of reasons. Maybe their parents did it. You know, a lot of people register as independents because they want to have the freedom to vote in both primaries, and you can request a Republican or a Democratic ballot. So you're right that the rise of independents in the state doesn't necessarily mean a rise of people who are undecided.
Yeah, and it's funny, Mark, just real quick, as a father, seeing I have a 13-year-old daughter, 14-year-old son, and they said to me, Dad, why would anyone want to register Republican or Democrat anyway? Why not be an independent where you can choose the best person? Which, you know, is their idealistic way of not understanding the political process. But I think millennials more and more are saying, we don't really want to be part of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party.
I want to talk about some of the races that haven't been getting a ton of attention, including the superintendent of public instruction race, in which you have the incumbent, John Hoopin, who's been you know, a superintendent slash blogger has gotten in trouble for some of his posts, and you have a Diane Douglas who's seemingly a one-issue candidate being stopping Common Core, the Arizona College and Career Ready Standards. Where do you guys see that race falling? I mean, does John Hoopenthal have anything to worry about in this race?
He might. And one of the really interesting things about the low turnout so far and the fact that a lot of people could vote in the next week is there may be a lot of people who are undecided. So as we said before and as Chip said before, you know, every mail or every TV ad, every news story could contribute to that. And Hoopenthal has, you know, received a lot of attention, and he definitely could be in trouble.
You know, the one thing I learned about when I was covering the Capitol when John Hoopenthal was a state lawmaker is never underestimate this guy. You know, he may be late night blogging, he may make verbal gaffes, but he's won a lot of elections going back to when he was a city council member in Chandler. So I kind of think he'll pull it out in the end. It'll be really close, and then I think it'll be a great matchup between him and David Garcia in the general election.
We've also not yet talked about the Attorney General's race, although that has gotten a lot of attention. We see dueling polls. Tom Horn says he's ahead. Mark Brnovich says he's ahead. Where do you guys see that race falling at this point?
I think Brnovich will probably win by 4 or 5 points. Just because of all of Tom Horn's flaws and all of his negative press. It's been a constant drumbeat over the last 2 years. So I think Mark Brnovich, even though he has low name ID, he's running a solid campaign. I think he'll go on to the general election.
Catherine, what do you think?
I agree with that, and the percentage of the vote that independents make up will end up having a big impact on that race, I think. You know, what Tom Horn does have is a lot of name ID, and if the Republican turnout in the primary skews more conservative, that could really help him. He's run on his conservative credentials, so with a more conservative audience, he could sneak it out.
We've talked a little bit about endorsements, and one of the things that has been going on is that the governor has been endorsing a lot of candidates, both statewide and legislative, in some cases sort of sticking it to incumbent members of her own party. How common or uncommon is it for a sitting governor, albeit she's not running again, so this is kind of her last act perhaps as a political governor, how common or uncommon is it to endorse a member of your party versus another member of your party, especially in a primary?
I think endorsements are such a personal choice that it always comes down to, you know, your relationship and your opinion. I think it's probably more common in this situation where the governor isn't running again, and maybe her decisions are in part informed by what she wants to do in her political future.
Yeah, I've been really surprised that even though Governor Brewer is leaving office, that she's endorsing a lot of first-time candidates against sitting Republican incumbents, and I think that's for two reasons. A, she knows she's not going to run again, but B, she really wants to protect her legacy of Medicaid restoration, of academic standards for children, and she's gone out of her way to endorse a lot of people where she didn't have to. And I don't remember, you know, Governor Napolitano or Governor Hull or Governor Symington being this active in a primary season.
Does it seem as though it's creating a split in the GOP among sort of the Brewer Republicans, you know, people who are in favor of Medicaid expansion, people who are supporting Common Core, and the, for lack of a better word, the anti-Brewer Republicans, people who think that stuff is terrible and are referring to the folks who voted for it as legislators?
Yeah, I think you're definitely hitting the point on the head, because there is a kind of separation between those I call pro-business, pragmatic, problem-solving Republicans and the more ideological, hey, we're going to vote because this is the way Republicans are supposed to vote. And, you know, just 5 years ago, if anyone called Governor Brewer a moderate, you'd laugh. But nowadays, I think the Republican Party, is shifting so far rightward that she's become kind of the center-right kind of person to lead that cause and that fight.
Catherine, are there any particular legislative races that you're looking at as indicative of what the next legislature might look like or trends that might be showing themselves?
I think during Medicaid expansion, it was discussed that the Republicans that supported the expansion would be at risk. It's going to be really interesting to see how voters gauge that and what the makeup of the legislature is moving forward.
Real quick, I think all the Medicaid Republicans will win their primaries and then win in their general elections. And then I think the one interesting battle is, unfortunately, Chester Crandall, state senator, passed away. But in that district, I think it was Legislative District 6, Tom O'Halloran, a former Republican, is running as an independent, and he has an excellent shot to win that seat. So I think he'd be the only independent lawmaker, which could make for an interesting story for you guys at KHS to cover.
Chip Scutari is co-founder. We appreciate the story by the way. Chip Scutari, co-founder of Scutari and Sizlak Public Relations. Catherine Alonzo is founding partner of the campaign consulting firm Javelina. Thanks to you both.
Thanks
for having us.
It's a pleasure.